Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Snug Wrestling. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome back again. We're going to be doing Backlash reviews tonight because better late than never. We haven't had the time to talk about Backlash that much since the show happened on Saturday. So that's what we're going to be doing tonight here at the Snug Wrestling Podcast. What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
You doing good?
Damn good, O's.
Yeet.
No yeet. Team no yeet.
There he fucking is.
Hey, guys. I completely forgot. I'm not even going to lie to you.
I hate you.
I forgot what we were doing. I'm so sorry about that. What I missed.
This was your idea. We already did the whole show.
Fuck you. I know that's bullshit. You sent me the link 28 minutes ago.
Yeah, literally just did the intro. That's it.
That's it? I haven't missed a match?
That's literally it. We just started.
Frank, again, really sorry. Got away from me. Was watching Mickey Mouse cartoons with my wife.
Oh, that's adorable.
No, don't do that, BT. No, don't encourage this asshole.
Hey, like I told you before, Snug, my mother still watches fucking Toy Story. I can celebrate a man watching cartoons.
Like, bruh.
Mickey and Minnie Mouse. Like,
don't you bruh me.
Bruh.
Mickey and Minnie Mouse were my wife's favorite things ever, so I started, because she always watches stuff that I want to watch, I decided to find something that she likes we can watch together, and they have the new Mickey Mouse shorts. It came out several years ago. It's like Mickey Mouse on crack or from Flapjack. but they're hilarious and they're adorable.
So. How dare you spend time with your wife over us, first of all. Unacceptable.
Oh,
I know.
Just let the man let out his inner child for a bit, okay?
How about we all shut up and talk about some wrestling?
The inner child pretty well let out.
How about we all shut up and talk about some wrestling?
Yeah, wrestling.
All right, we got some comments already. AR15 says, "Evening, fellas," and Ashton Gager says, "Yeet, ugh, back."
I didn't know Ashton Gager was a gentleman, a man of taste.
Get him the dictionary. Get him the dictionary.
You ever pull that dictionary out of me, toxic?
Get him the dictionary.
I don't got one on me.
All right. The first match we're going to get into, we're going to go in order here, you guys. We're going to start off with the Fatal 4-Way match. Jacob Fatu, he retained. And Jeff Cobb finally showed up and made his WWE debut after assisting Jacob Fatu. To the surprise of Jacob Fatu, he seemed really thrown off by this. Jacob Fatu seemed confused. He didn't know what the fuck was going on. But it looks like this was Solo Sikoa's call. The tribal chief, Solo Sikoa. The real tribal chief brought in Jeff Cobb. And things are going to get interesting here in this United States title picture, I think. But overall, thoughts on this, Mr. Blood? Even though you were late, like 30 minutes, go ahead, get us started.
That long 30 minutes, y'all were doing nothing. other than that, I thought the match was great. I remember, you know, one of your biggest problems with this match was you Snug specifically, was that you were kind of getting burnt out on the multi-man matches. You were kind of tired of seeing them. You feel like you'd already seen these before. And my rebuttal to that was, well, the great thing about a multi-man match is that you can run it so many different ways. And I thought they did a really great job here. It felt very different from Mania. They tried some new spots. I thought they were giving LA Knight a lot in this match, which I thought was great. So he doesn't feel like the afterthought of the group of four. I thought Damian kind of squaring up. I thought everything about this was really, really fun. Everybody gets a moment to shine here. And the men of the match, specifically Jacob, you know, the crowd's on fire for him, right? I mean, he's over like Rover, man. They're popping for him left and right. I mean, the dude just turns his head and looks at the crowd. They go ape shit. I thought it was very, very fun, very well booked. The right guy won, still retained. And if you remember, I actually had said that I have a feeling Solo's interfering. I did say that it was going to go one of two ways. I said either Solo was going to interfere and betray Jacob, or Solo was going to introduce a new member, someone we haven't seen before. I felt like maybe he was going to reintroduce Bronson Reed specifically, is who I thought he might bring back from injury, since we haven't seen him since War Games. Or I thought Tonga Loa would make a return, because now we know that Tama Tonga is out with an injury as well. So, he injured, I think, his wrist or his hand. So, as far as it's concerned, Jeff Cobb was an interesting choice. We knew that he had been signed for a bit now. We were all wondering what that was going to mean. Now, Cobb, here's the interesting thing about Cobb specifically. Cobb is not Polynesian. Cobb is Filipino. So here's the weird thing about this. Is Jacob angry that Solo brought a guy in who's not family, that he's not a Samoan, he's not of Tongan blood, he's not of Maori blood, he's not of any of these bloods? He's in fact not even Polynesian. He is Filipino. And I guess the one argument that you can make in Solo's defense is, well, hey, Roman can bring in Sammy, I can't bring in Jeff Cobb, kind of thing. You know, so I think he's going to be the nega Sammy, like the opposite Sammy, where he's going to be the honorary Us, but on Solo's behalf. So I think the main reason to wrap this up, the main reason Jacob was probably angry is either one, Jeff Cobb's an outsider. And we know this from Jacob's presentation already. He's all about the tradition, and he's all about that vindication. Or two, Jeff Cobb coming in and them helping Jacob win. Jacob, remember, he doesn't like help. He doesn't like cheating. What Jacob says, I'm going to do it with you or without you. And I've been doing it without you. So now he's like, don't start helping me now. You know, so I think that this is going to be interesting. There's going to be some headbutting here. You know, Solo said he's running out of soldiers. And so he went and got Jacob fought too. Or not Jacob fought too, but Jeff Cobb. So I think let's see where this goes. But all in all, great match. Correct guy won. Gave it a lot of time to shine. Everybody got their moments. And a new introduction of a brand new guy to the story. So let's wait and see.
Yeah, I agree. I really like this match. Everyone got a lot of time to shine. I feel like just Drew got less out of the four. Drew got a little bit less, but he still got a moment to shine, which I'm glad. He, in my opinion, he's not that interesting on a weekly basis. Also, I'm pretty sure Drew got injured whenever Priest did that South of Heaven off of the crates and onto a table, because Drew was seen like reaching for his head in pain. So, if he is injured, get well soon, Drew. But Jeff Cobb, not expecting that whatsoever. No one was. Well, except for Blood, because, oh, I called it. Anyways, I think Jacob didn't like the fact that Jeff Cobb was there, because they have had a lot of beef before Jacob was even in WWE, in Jacob's indie days, I want to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, yeah, I'm interested to see where this leads to.
So, I myself was a little bit confused on the Jeff Cobb thing. It's like, I get it, he was signed, all of that. But Zilla's right there. He's literally right there. He's been saying this entire time that he wants to join this storyline. He's in the family already. He's right there. Why the hell didn't you just take that spot? But I will agree, the right man won. The correct man won. this was one of the ones that didn't we all agree that it was going to end up being Jacob, if I'm correct? It's like this was one of the ones where we were unanimous on it. There was no possible way that they weren't taking it off of Jacob, especially with how hot he is right now. There was just no way. But with Jacob, the question is, who's next? And if you're going with one of these three, which one do you even choose out of the three of them? Knight has had two different reigns. So I would think that he's kind of out of it if I had to choose between the three. Doesn't Drew only need the United States, if I'm correct?
Yeah, Drew only needs the United States.
So it would be interesting to see what in the world it would look like if Drew had a United States title reign. It's the only one he needs. I have the same thoughts when it comes to Sheamus with the Intercontinental. They only need one. Give it to him at some point.
Tommy, to really quickly answer your question as to why not Zilla. Specifically, it's because Zilla had already touted when they signed him. He was on an interview stating that he was calling Solo a basically a Teemu Umaga. Who do you think you are, ripping off my dad's moves, this, that, and the third? So he said, like, if he got involved in the storyline, it's because he would want to join Roman's side against Solo. So if you say that publicly, now WWE can't backtrack over you because he said that as soon as they signed him. It was the first thing he said in an interview the week they signed him. So that's why.
Yeah, also Zilla is a champion in whatever promotion he's in.
So was Omos while he was signed with WWE. He was a tag team champion while being signed.
Yeah, usually when someone is like a champion in another company and they get signed by WWE, they lose the title right away. Like, but yeah, BT, what do you think?
By the way, Omos had dropped the fucking, I think it was either tag title or whatever title he was holding on to, because he said he was going to join the Royal Rumble. What the fuck happened there? Legit cut a fucking promo saying that he was going to join the Royal Rumble. Never fucking showed up. But I digress. The Fatal 4-Way match I really enjoyed. And the people who say that LA Knight can't wrestle, you're talking out of your ass. Look at the work rate that he put in that match. Look at the work rate that he's put over the past couple of years. His first US title run. So much fun. Hardworking. I'm still pissed off that they gave it to Shinsuke. I will never get over that. And like I said last time when we were on here, they didn't even want to give him a second chance with the US title, with his second US title run. Because the titles can only be relevant when there's a Bloodline member involved. Isn't that right, Toxic? You were the one that said that. But anyway, the Fatal 4-Way match was brilliant. Jeff Cobb, don't even know who he is. So I'm still interested in what happens in that department, but all I knew was that Fatu and Cobb have a bit of history together, and I think they can capitalize on that. So I'm very excited to see what happens there. Yeah, I enjoyed the Fatal 4-Way match. I think it was the best match of the night. Point blank, period.
Shout out to Maria. Maria, she says, off topic, but do y'all think this will be the road towards Solo versus Jacob? That's not really off topic. That's exactly what we're talking about, Maria. Thank you for your question. I think so. I think this is definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. But just really quick, to go back to what Tommy was saying, why not Zilla and why Jeff Cobb? And for the people that aren't familiar with Jeff Cobb, I think you guys are in for a treat. I mean, the last few guys that the WWE has signed, it hasn't been for no reason. These guys are good. Jeff Cobb is good. He's actually really fucking good.
You know, I bet that you guys have actually seen him without knowing you've seen him. BT, you watch Dubin Ross, right? You watch him the Clutch ENT like I do, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I've been watching them religiously for years, and I always watch their Wrestling Reacts videos every time they come out. There are a lot of footage in those video clips of these two really, really, really big guys, specifically like Keith Lee and this really big, heavy-set Bronson Reed body-styled guy in like a blue singlet and boots, longer black hair, and they're throwing each other around, massive power bombs, flips, backflips. That's Jeff Cobb.
Okay.
In those video clips, you go back, that's Jeff Cobb on the indie circuit when he was coming up. If you've ever watched his videos, he's in nearly every one of the earlier sets of those like first 50, 60 videos of clips. And if you've watched him react, you've definitely seen him. But Snug is okay. Right. Snug's 100% right. Jeff Cobb, originally people don't realize this. If you're new to him, he had recently touted he was retiring from wrestling too long ago. That's why this is such a surprise. But he is a whirlwind of talent for a guy his size. I don't know about you, Snug, but I'm extremely excited. I'm hoping one day we're going to get to see Bronson Reed versus Jeff Cobb.
I want to see Jacob Fatu versus Jeff Cobb in the WWE ring. I know they've wrestled in the past in the indies and stuff, but yeah, I'm definitely excited for this. I've seen Jeff Cobb in AEW, but they didn't really use him a whole lot there. But he's wrestled everywhere, man. Every company you can think of, from MLW, Lucha Underground, I want to say maybe even the NWA. I'm not too sure, but this guy's a veteran. He's in his 40s. He knows what he's doing. And
with how shocked he was when he came out, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they're already starting to lead to.
I don't think they'll get into like their history that they have with Jake Fatu.
They're going to slow burn it.
Well, also WWE is not really that big into shining light into anything that has nothing to do with WWE.
By them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think
the smart fans know.
The smart fans know, but I think they're going to, whatever they do, I think it's going to be interesting. Blood, I'm starting to lean more towards what you were saying, how he's going to be like the honorary member. Although, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't address the fact that he's not Samoan, because, I mean, are they still even doing that whole bloodline thing? I don't even think.
They're still calling this group the Bloodline on TV.
I haven't heard them be called the Bloodline on TV in months.
I feel like they've mentioned Solo and his crew, the Bloodline, they're calling them something still, because they already stated that Roman's Bloodline was disbanded. They said that a couple weeks ago at the last PLE, and we were all shocked. I was like, remember when I said, this is how we find out the OG Bloodline's no more? Just a quick one-liner on commentary, you know, kind of thing. So
pretty sure they're not mentioning that anymore. So I think this might be, this goes deeper than that. This goes deeper into Solo just going behind Jacob's back and just doing shady shit that Jacob isn't approving, you know? But definitely interesting.
We'll have to see, but I think SmackDown's finally going to get another interesting story, because I think we can all agree anything involving Solo and the Tongans has been, if it's not Jacob Fatu.
SmackDown is definitely going to be changing with all of this. And also next month, it's supposed to be going back to 2 hours too, by the way, guys.
Yes, thank freaking God, yeah. So, I mean, I think the only thing that sucks here is that, remember originally they were afraid of pushing Jacob early and introducing Jacob early because they thought he was going to outshine Solo. Remember, that was the initial fear. That's why they held off on debuting him for so long. Even though he'd been with the company for like 4 months already signed, they held off because they didn't want him to overshadow Solo going into his bout with Roman. And then they finally said, fuck it, let's pull the trigger. We'll do it. We'll see what happens. And lo and behold, Jacob outshines Solo in relatively about a week and a half. So you got to wonder, is adding Jeff Cobb helping Solo at all? Because it looks to me like now that Tongaloa's out on injury, freaking Tama Tonga's out on injury, looking like he's going to have to get hand surgery, we're literally like at the point where it's like, is Solo the weakest link in his own group that he's the head of? And I don't know if that helps Solo's presentation.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think so.
Boring for a while, as of recently. Like, as I have said in the past, Jacob is kind of carrying this bloodline. He has for a while now.
Not kind of. The man is.
All right, y'all. Let's move on. We'll see what happens with the United States title picture. I guess I was talking about this match earlier, and I begged this question, so I'm going to ask you guys the same question. So we kind of know what's happening with, you know, Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest. It looks like they're going to continue their feud. We see Jacob Fatu and, you know, what he might be getting involved with this whole Jeff Cobb thing. What happens with LA Knight?
I think you're going to have to move him into the Money in the Bank picture or something. Because in my head, I think the only people that makes, like, Money in the Bank's going to have 6 to 8 people, depending, because they changed on here. We're going to have an 8-man ladder match, we'll have a 6-man ladder match. But I think that people who absolutely, like, unequivocally have to be in that match, like, Sami Zayn needs to be in it. LA Knight needs to be in it. Bron Breakker needs to be in it. Like, there are guys you can pick out. Drew was in it last year. Damian's already won it. They don't need to get in it. You know, like, you can put Solo in it. Like, there are guys that, for storyline purposes, that if those individuals were in it and won, it would have a massive impact on what the end of this year could look like title picture-wise. And remember I said that whomever wins Money in the Bank, I have a pit in my stomach that they are cashing in on the winner between Jay and Gunther. And I've got this weird, weird feeling. LA Knight's in the Money in the Bank. He's not winning it, though, but he's in it. I think what's next for him is the build to Money in the Bank. But the bigger story for me personally is I think either Bron Breakker or Seth is going to weasel their way into that match. And I think one of them is taking that briefcase. And I think one of them is cashing in on Gunther or Jay. I think Punk needs to be in it too. But I think that's what's next for LA. It's just the quick build to him being the Money in the Bank match. Then we're going to have to see where we go from there with him after that. But I would love to see him back in the world title picture. They've already laid the foundation. I think the biggest thing LA's going to have this year is a feud with John Cena, because they already laid the foundation for him and John 2 years ago when they were tagging together, helping each other out. But now that, you know, John's given LA that rub, we need that one-on-one. And I think eventually we're going to get there by the end of the year, that one-on-one match that they kind of teased 2 years ago. I think LA's not winning Money in the Bank, but I don't think he needs to win Money in the Bank. I think he's going to get a massive spotlight shined on him in a feud with Cena heading towards the end of this year. So I think that's really what the penultimate thing next for LA Knight is, that's going to really put a spotlight back on it.
Anything else you guys want to add, BT, Tommy, Toxic, before we move on to the next match?
I just don't see, and this is kind of off topic, I just don't see anyone cashing in on Jay. I could see the winner of the Men's Money in the Bank briefcase cashing in on Cena, which it would be. Actually, I don't know, but I think that LA would definitely have to go after Cena, because if he's not gonna continue with the United States title picture and Damian and Drew are continuing their story, then why not give LA Knight kind of a world title push, if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I would much rather see the winner of the Money in the Bank try to cash in on Cena than Jey Uso, for me personally also.
If I'm being completely honest when it comes to the Money in the Bank match, I still think that they're going to find a way to put Logan Paul in there and put it on him, literally only to bring eyes to the company more.
Yeah.
He doesn't need it, but it being on Logan will bring more and more eyes to the product.
I mean, we've all said it before. We've all said it before. Logan Paul eventually is going to be world champion.
Like, he is, but I mean, what a waste of, with what's going on with Cena right now. The only one, you know what? I'll give this to BT to brighten his day. If LA Knight's in that match, the only way I want LA Knight winning that Money in the Bank briefcase is if he's using it to go after Cena. That's the only way I want to see him win that match. But for the love of God, if we're doing Logan Paul versus Jey Uso already at this Saturday night's main event, I do not need to see John Cena versus Logan Paul. I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't think anybody wants it. Probably other than Logan. But for the love of God, don't waste the story potential of that briefcase on Logan, who's supposedly a full-timer now, but still only shows up every several handful of weeks when it's time for a PLE bill. Don't waste it on him. Please don't put that into the ether.
All right, let's move on, you guys. Let's go on to the next match. Lyra versus Becky Lynch for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Lyra retained like I was hoping. God, man, I was so relieved when Lyra finally beat Becky Lynch after a long, long match that I thought would never end. But Lyra, she really stood out in this match. She was a superior athlete, not just physically, but in the ring, man. That girl can move, and I'm really glad that she retained, because if Becky Lynch won this thing, I would have been heated. I would have been big mad, y'all. Toxic, you're up, dude. What did you think about this match for the Women's Intercontinental Championship?
When we did our predictions, I said that I didn't care for this match, and it would most likely be the bathroom break match. But I actually watched it, and I kind of take back what I said. I kind of enjoyed that match. Yeah, Lyra does look like someone threw up in her hair. And Becky, she just looks like she's wearing like some, I don't know, but it just looks weird. But the match was great. I don't know exactly how Lyra is doing after, because apparently she broke her nose or something. That's what I heard. And the multiple shots towards the arm of hers from Becky might have done something. So I'm not going to be surprised if the Intercontinental Championship, the Women's Intercontinental Championship gets relinquished soon. But I don't think it would. I don't think it was. Part of me think it's going to get relinquished. Part of me doesn't. But I kind of take back what I said, that it was kind of not the bathroom break match for me. But I still enjoyed it.
All right. So, with this, my question still stands. Because of the fact that the women's mid-card stuff is so out of whack right now, the question still remains. It honestly didn't matter who won who's next? Because there's literally no one that I can think of. Because they took out the main name. They released that main name in Dakota Kai. And she was the main one that people wanted to hold that women's intercontinental. So with that, without Dakota Kai, who's next? I do not see them putting it on Ivy. Zoe maybe, but we haven't really seen her in a bit, though. That's the thing. I mean, yes, she can carry on her own. But the issue here stands that we have seen Zoe Stark with these other two women this entire time. And you just released both of them. Now it's just Zoe. The entirety of Pure Fusion Collective has dropped. Who's next?
Well, I can throw out a couple names really quick. They just got called up to Monday Night Raw, Roxanne, like AR-15 on the comments said, and also Julia.
Both of them are going after the world title right now, though. That's the thing. They're both involved with EO.
They seem to be going for the world title. They also seem to be in a tag team, which they can go after the tag team division, but they're also both singles competitors. I think you can throw them in any division right now.
Ivy.
Ugh.
She's a great wrestler, though.
Yeah, she's
you just
great.
Love her.
She's great.
She's still stuck with the Women's United States right now.
Wait, two people talking at a time here. Go ahead, Tommy. It's your turn.
Like she's still stuck with the Women's United States right now. She's on the wrong brand for the Intercontinental.
Who is?
Unless I'm thinking of someone else.
Ivy Nile?
Ivy's on Raw, brother.
Yeah, Ivy Nile's on Raw.
Oh, I was thinking of that chick from American Made. Never mind.
Maxine.
It's Ivy.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit confused, but...
Yeah, the point still stands here that the mid-card titles are so out of whack that we don't know who's next. We don't know what the line is whatsoever. We don't know who's in the line, who's out of the line. We don't know. These things were just thrown together.
Whoever it is, it's got to be someone credible, because Lyra Valkyrie has successfully defended the IC title a handful of times, I think, and she just came off beating Becky Lynch, who's like one of, for the second time. So whoever it is, it has to be someone believable. But we'll see what happens. BT, what do you think about this?
I enjoyed the match. I think the ending to the match, though, was very sloppy. It was very sloppy. The roll-up pins looked very botched at the end, especially with Lyra holding her nose because she thought she broke it. But to the people who say that this match is better than the Fatal 4-Way, you're out of your fucking mind. How the fuck is this match better than the Fatal 4-Way? How?
I can answer that for you, but I'll let you finish.
Bruh. How? The Fatal 4-Way match was the best way to open up the show. I mean, I get Becky and Lyra put on a hell of a technical match. They did. They put on a hell of a match. And I'll give them respect for that. But it did not top off the Fatal 4-Way. It just didn't. With all the carnage in that Fatal 4-Way and all the brawls and all the storytelling that was in it, it did not top that Becky and Lyra match did not top that Fatal 4-Way match, in my opinion. It just didn't. There is a reason why the Fatal 4-Way match opened that show. And there is no disrespect to Becky and Lyra. This isn't me getting at them because they are women, okay? Before anybody makes that type of fucking comment. I want the women to thrive in the wrestling business, okay? I don't know what it is that Triple H needs to do, but he needs to pull his head out of his fucking ass and get this women's division booked right. Because even Mr. Blood has said this on record millions of fucking times. The way that the women have been booked is fucking atrocious. Maybe if you book the women's division better, maybe I'd fucking care. Maybe we'd fucking care. That is my number one plea. But hey, they may not listen to me. I always pray to the wrestling gods and I never get what I fucking want anyways, so. But, I liked the match. I just thought the roll-up pins at the end were a bit sloppy. But, I'm excited to see what's next for Lyra.
So I can kind of answer the question for you as to why people think that Becky Lyra 2 was better than the Fatal 4-Way. And I said this last night on the Raw review. There's different ways to look at a match. The Fatal 4-Way match was not, and hear me here, understand the difference. The Fatal 4-Way match was not the better wrestled match. It was a spectacle match. It's a showcase style match. It's a spot match. Becky Lyra was an actual full-on wrestled match. There's the difference. If you talk about the Fatal 4-Way, it's better because it was more entertaining. It had more of a spectacle. There was more energy, more God who could win, more holding your breath, more edge of your seat in that of a spectacle.
No rules.
Lyra Becky 2 is a pure technically wrestled match. Real actual psychology, okay? So if you're looking for like someone like me, who, like we said last night, is a sucker and a diehard for technical psychology or psychological wrestling. That is my bread and butter. I love it. I wrestled as a technical wrestler. So when I see it, I'm like, ooh, butter my popcorn. Let's see the psychology at play here. So for me, I loved Becky Lyra 2 more than the Fatal 4-Way. Because it was what I was looking for in a one-on-one match. But if I'm talking about a multi-man scenario, Fatal 4-Way, just take my money. That's what I want to see. They gave it to us. What a hell of an opener, period. Point blank, kiss my ass. Point blank, it was a great match. Can't take it away from those guys. I mean, awesome. But Becky and Lyra, I feel like we all owe them an apology because we all were shitting on this. Though the story was awful, I'm happy to say, and by the way, Toxic already apologized for it. I was watching it after I got home from Universal Studios with Jonathan and my wife and Christina. And I literally remember watching it. It's like 11:30 at night. I got two, thank God. I was like, oh God, how long is the show going to be? 2.5 hours. Oh, yay. And I was like, okay, let's see this. And in the middle of watching it, halfway through, I literally thought, man, and Toxic said this shit was a piss break match. I wonder what his thoughts are going to be. Like, you know, that was literally what I thought. As far as the roll-ups, I'm giving them some slack because I thought that they did like 2 roll-up counters too many. I'll give you that. But as far as sloppiness, I give them a break because I didn't feel like it was too sloppy. I felt like, oh shit, I think she broke her nose because I noticed she was catering that nose before the roll-up sequence started. And I was like, oh shit, why does the top of her nose look a little crooked? And I was like, oh, she probably can't see. I don't know if anybody ever broke your nose, but it's hyper disorienting. Your eyes water, you can't see, and it's incredibly difficult to breathe. So, because right up here, you have capillaries, you have blood vessels right here. And when your nose breaks, it smacks into them. And it just makes your eyes swell. And you're doing this the whole time. So with her, I give props to her that she was able to keep countering sequences, though she probably was as uncomfortable as she could have possibly been trying to make sure nothing brushed into her nose during the exchanges. Because even if she communicates to Becky, they're doing like O'Connor rolls, Charlotte's webs. They're doing over-under pins. They're doing jackknife pins. At some point, Becky's leg or something could sweep across her face. So she's trying to protect herself. So I'll give them that. I thought the match was better than I thought it had any right to be. And even though I know these girls can go. But I give it to Tommy because we all said this. We all agreed on this. Who is next? Because you've got to assume Bayley is coming back after Becky. That takes them out of the Intercontinental Championship picture, unless they're going to smack us all in the face and make this shit a triple threat. And if that happens, okay, you're literally just giving me the same story, because all I can see when I look at that division is go, man, you don't have any idea where to put these girls, do you? Okay? You're just throwing tag teams together. You're throwing people in stables and groups. Ivy's right there, okay? Zoe Stark, freshly back on the single scene right there. You've got Roxanne, brand new up there. She's too new, but hey, she's fresh. Same thing with Julia. I think the women's division sorely needs, drum roll please, a draft. Let's shake up the fucking divisions. Get some fresh faces in these separate divisions so we can have fresh matchups. We've been having the same matchups, crossovers, switchups for a year. The difference is, now that these titles were introduced after the last brand draft, now we're going to get to see people going for these two titles that have never actually gotten to go for them ever before, because they were introduced after the draft last year. So we're really going to get some actual, cool, real, fresh matchups out of a draft. And I think that's what this women's division sorely needs, because these women deserve more. And I think we can all agree on that. They're doing the best with what they can. But as far as this match is concerned, I am so happy to say I was wrong about this, and I will admit that full wholeheartedly. I loved it. Period, point blank, done. Toxic.
I think, hold on a second. I think now that you mentioned up the drafts, there was a report from Dave Meltzer's thing, and I know they're not usually right, but when it comes to some things, they usually get these things right. They're reporting that the draft might happen pretty soon. I think they said like next month or something like that, the draft is supposed to happen. So, I mean, I think that makes sense. I'm actually not against the draft anymore, especially how the fucking, you know, this mid-card women's title scene is looking right now. So, yeah, I think a draft wouldn't be such a bad idea, but go ahead, Toxic.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, but I think it was like around the end of this month. I think that's when it did. I don't know.
All right. Let's move on here. Dominic Mysterio versus Penta for the Men's Intercontinental Championship. Dominic Mysterio retained with the help from the greatest luchador of all time. El Grande Americano showed up. Headbutted Penta right on the kisser with his metal forehead. But before that, you know, I don't want people to think, if you guys didn't watch it, that Dominic Mysterio, he won because he had help. Yes, he had help. Yes, the Judgment Day was up there. Yes, El Grande Americano interfered. However, for the better part, when this match got started, Dominic Mysterio went out there by himself. He stood toe-to-toe with Penta, and they had a great competitive match. Dominic Mysterio did not look like the usual job guy that always gets beat up, the chicken shit heel, the weakling. You know, Dominic Mysterio looked like an actual champion defending his title there versus Penta. So I got to give Dom credit, even though the finish it wasn't a clean finish, but Dominic Mysterio won. He's still the Intercontinental title. A lot of people were expecting Penta to win it, but that did not happen. Tommy, what did you learn from this match, or what stood out to you about this?
I said it once, I said it a million times, that's fucking Jack Gable. Shut the fuck up. But I will say this, though. I will give Dom credit here. He did come out on his own. He did give Penta a run for his money. But when the rest of the Judgment Day came out, I honestly think that this storyline involving the Intercontinental, especially with Finn, yeah. Because Dom said it on Raw, but this happened here. They come out, Finn grabs a chair and hesitates. He was too slow with it. Because what he really wanted to do is he wanted to take out Dom. That's what he wanted to do. But obviously with this, he couldn't do that. So the rest of the Judgment Day was taken out. And I will say there was a couple times in this match where I thought, oh, Dom might actually lose it. Are they really going to make this reign this short? And then masked Chad Gable comes out with that classic metal in the mask headbutt of his. That's when I knew for sure that, oh, that this is how it ends. Of course, it ends in an interference. Because, of course, you can't have a Judgment Day match without interference. It's the same thing with the Bloodline, unfortunately. None of them can really win on their own. But, as I've already stated, Dom definitely gave Penta a run for his money. He truly did. And I'm pretty sure that surprised all of us a little bit.
This fucking match. Holy shit. Dominic Mysterio, shout out to him for the technical abilities that he fucking put on display that night. I gotta fucking give credit to him for that. A dive into a DDT. Dives from the middle rope into a DDT. Bruh. That's crazy. That is crazy. I swear to God, you're gonna make fun of me for that every time. But, yeah. It's definitely a strong showing for Dominic Mysterio, which I really liked. I love how hesitant Finn Balor was, because he could have at least punched Penta in the face. But instead he said, hold on, let me grab a chair, make this sting a little bit. And then the referee turns around and he's like, balls. God damn it. Like, bruh, that was your only demise. That was your one demise. You stupid son of a bitch. All you had to do was punch him. That's all you had to do. But El Grande Americano, aka Chad Gable, you cannot convince me otherwise, or Jason Jordan. I will go for either one of them. I think I could go Jason Jordan. Bugger it. Anyway, El Grande Americano comes by and costs Penta. And I was very let me just say confused as to why it was El Grande Americano who helped Dominic win the match. I was very confused. I'm like, why him of all people? Like, they could have chosen anybody else, but they chose him?
He hates Penta right now.
True. But anyway, I thought it was a really good strong showing for Dominic Mysterio. He's not the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. He's not the greatest Mysterio of all time, but he is definitely a respectable champion in my book. I will definitely give him that. His ego just needs to be in check. But, really good showing from both superstars. It was a fun match. I enjoyed it.
So I think possibly Snug and I are going to be the only ones here who aren't surprised at all. I mean, we've been praising the hell out of Dominic's ability forever. I've said myself many times, Dom is insanely good. He's a workhorse. He just does the booking that they give him. But you look at Dom from when he started tagging with Ray to now, he trimmed all the fat. He gained all the ability. Remember at one point, I think it was 2023, he wrestled the most matches out of anybody in the company between televised and house show and live events. He wrestled the most that entire year out of the entire company for the men's division. And remember, Rhea was even on Logan Paul's podcast and straight up said he wrestled while he was injured all the time and never complained about it. He couldn't feel his arm for 2 weeks and kept wrestling. So when I look at Dom, people say, oh, he's the worst Mysterio. People forget, look, there's actual Rey Mysterio. Then there's Rey Mysterio Jr., because you guys might not be old enough to know that, but Rey Mysterio Jr. is Dominic's father. Rey Mysterio on the roster today is not the first Rey Mysterio, he's the second. So a lot of people don't remember that or know that. But I think Dominic has the potential to not only be better than Ray, I think he genuinely has the potential to be the best Mysterio, period. Because when you think about it, one thing that this match showed everybody who hasn't been paying attention, I hope you see it now, his crowd work is insane. He knows how to pause and let the moment simmer. He knows how to sell and stay down long enough. The Undertaker sings hallelujah. He's great in ring. You look at him 4 years ago, you look at him now. I see a completely different man in that ring than I did 4 years ago. He is genuinely, genuinely coming to his own as a performer. He doesn't ever need to put on a mask. A lot of people always thought that Rey's retirement match should be him passing along the mantle of Rey Mysterio in the mask to his son. No, I think Dominic needs to stand on his own forever. And here's the thing about this match. Penta, workhorse. Of all the people to have Dom have his first title defense against, insanely, incredibly intelligent choice. Aside from the fact that when I also said that the first match that Penta had was against Chad Gable, was also the smartest choice you could have made for a debut match for Penta. Same thing goes here. First ever debut title defense for Dom against Penta. What a smart move on Triple H's part. Great match, insanely well worked. They let Dom actually show that he can carry a match, because if you rewatch the match, Dom's a spot caller. He's calling the match. He's 100% the one in charge of calling the match the entire time. And I'm like, good on you, dude. He was great, insanely talented here. I also would like to point out, by this point in the show, every single match got This Is Awesome chance up to this point. Every match. This St. Louis crowd was great. Great all night. And this match, I mean, everything that these guys did, they popped for. The interference, or as WrestleTalk likes to say, finterference, because it's always Finn coming out. I thought was well done. It showed the hesitancy that Finn is like, do I even really want to help you? You're just the little runt. I'm literally the veteran here in our group. Me and JD are the veterans here, and I taught JD. You know,
Carlito.
You know, Carlito too, but Finn's been wrestling longer than Carlito. He's older than Carlito. So it's like, when you look, Finn's like 45, 46 years old. I think Carlito's got to be 43, 44. But Finn's been wrestling since he was a teenager. So when I look at this, I go, okay, we're starting to get the cracks. The only gripe I have is that they didn't do what I was hoping they would do. And I know that comes down to the internet wrestling community bullshit.
Carlito's 46.
I thought that they missed an opportunity here. I thought they really missed an opportunity here to have Finn turn on Dom that night. I thought it's perfect. Liv is away. Finn can finally cut the rugs out from under her, pull the legs out, get one over, screw Dom over. Penta gets the title, goes over. And then you set up the full destruction dissension between Dom and Finn because Liv's not there to undermine Finn. I thought this was the night. It was perfect because she's gone. And now they've mentioned on Raw that she'll be back sooner than we think. So I thought this was kind of a missed opportunity for that. That being said, to this point, every match so far, top marks. But this one, man, what a great way to showcase your Intercontinental Champion.